Hello, everyone, and welcome to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on BBS Radio, Talk Radio. Please visit our website on BBS Radio. You can find us at bbsradio.com, American Freedom Watch Radio. Look for us, and we are with you every other Wednesday evening on Station 1. To listen by phone only, please dial 71. I guess I shouldn't say dial anymore. That dates me. So let's try that one again. Please push the buttons 716-748-0150. And if you want to speak to Tom or myself, Tom is going to be our guest, please call in on the air and you will be able to talk to us. And that would be 888-627-6008. Well, folks, I am so glad to have all of you with us today. You can also find us on Facebook, and that would be facebook.com, American Freedom Watch Radio. And today, we have a wonderful guest who I feel is of utmost importance because of things that have happened in the United States over the last several weeks with our president, who is now combining the things that we've been speaking about that are being kept separate. Well, now they're being combined. Last week, if you remember, on September 25th, there was a big hoopla at the United Nations. What were they doing? Well, they were introducing the new plan called Agenda 2030. What do you mean, new plan? How does that work? We don't even know there was an old plan. Well, that's the problem, folks. The old and original plan was called Agenda 21. However, when we spoke about it, when we tried to alert people to that, we were told we were crazy, we had tinfoil hats, we were out of our minds, this was not happening, we were nuts. Lo and behold, not only did we bring this to light, and did we share the information with you? Did we educate you? Did we show you and explain the dangers and then give you tools to help you combat that? They said, oh my goodness, these people are finding out, so we're going to do exactly what good little liberal progressives do. We'll keep the same program and we'll change the name to confuse them. Folks, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030 are all part of the same plan called Sustainable Development. Now, I have on the show with me today one of the, I have to say, the premier experts on Agenda 21, Tom DeWeese. And you can find Tom on his website, AmericanPolicy.org, because Tom is heading up the American Policy Center, of which he has done for the last 20 or so years. So Tom has been in this fight since the beginning. Welcome, Tom, and thank you so much for joining me this evening.
Hey,
welcome,
thanks, Karen.
To the show.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Oh, Tom. Tom, I'll tell you, last week when I listened to the Pope, and I realized when he was speaking in front of the United Nations, something was missing after I listened to him. And I realized he did not open his address with a prayer, and he did not close the address with a prayer. So that put my little antenna up, and I said, okay, why was the Pope really in America? Did he come to bless America? I don't think so. What I believe the Pope was here was to advance the new world order, the one world government, and now bring in a one world religion. So I think that that's where all of this is going. And what would you think about that, Tom?
Oh, I totally agree with you, because I was watching what he was doing before he got here. They had a big meeting in Rome to kind of announce the Pope's new, he was promoting the whole global warming thing. They had a big conference on that, and there in Rome and at the Vatican. And I had some associates that went to that meeting in an attempt to try to set things straight and get our side heard on that, and they were summarily dismissed and pretty much thrown out of the meeting because they did that. They were pretty much threatened, that, you know, shut up or, you know, get out of here, and threatened with armed guards and so forth at the Vatican. So
wow.
We knew this was coming. We knew this is what it was about, and that was very noticeable. That all the things, what I've noticed about what he's promoting here is everything that everything I know about the Catholic Church. I'm not Catholic, but my sister is, and I've had a lot of face with it. Everything that I know that the Catholic Church stands for, he was going completely against that. Number one is in promoting these ideas of sustainable development that he was doing, and you know, using global warming as the excuse for it all. What they advocate is reducing the population. And what I know of the Catholic Church is they have fought tooth and nail to stop sterilization, abortions, human life in every way. This goes absolutely against everything that the Catholic Church has ever taught, and this is the Pope doing this.
Well, so now we have a new group that has formed, one promoting a one-world governance, a global government headed by the United Nations. And there we have our wonderful president, Barack Obama, who I believe is now vying for the Secretary of the UN job. I think that's what his speech was all about. And now we have the Catholic dioceses who are going to be falling lockstep in line to promote a one-world religion. And, of course, the world will now be headed by the United Nations. So that's the result of what this plan is all about. But, Tom, we have a lot of new listeners. Can you give them, I know it's not brief because, folks, this is a huge deal, but maybe you can give them a short synopsis and summary of what Agenda 21/2030/sustainable development is all about.
Yeah, well, when Agenda 21 was first introduced to the world in 1992 at the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, the promoters of it called it a comprehensive blueprint for changing human society. And they continued to call it that for a long time in their documents until we began to expose it, and then suddenly they threw it behind their hands and their backs, and they said, I don't know what you're talking about, never heard of it. But they used it over and over again, a comprehensive blueprint, and they try to tell us today that it's just a suggestion, it doesn't mean anything. But just to go into a little bit of detail of what it is, the logo that they use for sustainable development is three connecting circles, and each one of them is marked. One is marked social equity, one is marked economic prosperity, one is ecological integrity. It's what we call the three E's. And these three things encompass every aspect of your life. The economic prosperity, dealing with business, with corporations, there are certain corporations that are put out in the forefront, and they get into partnership, public-private partnerships with the government. And when they get into that, then they get special privileges. They get tax breaks. They get, maybe if they're a developer, they're able to develop land that no other developer is allowed to. They get all kinds of goodies in the background. And basically, they're kind of a quasi-government along with government officials. And they get the power of eminent domain and everything. And
One of the things that we learned when we were studying Agenda 21 is that the easiest way for them to put these plans in place was, as you said, to create a quasi-government, only they called these government agencies NGOs or non-governmental organizations, so people would think they were outside the government.
Yeah,
but
these are private...
Isn't that sorry, opposite of our Constitution?
Sure, yeah. They would tell you that they are civil society, and in fact the United Nations calls them that. These non-profit, governmental organizations, private organizations, we're talking the Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, the Audubon Society, the National Education Association, the Planned Parenthood. These are all official NGO groups out of the United Nations. And in the United Nations Charter, it actually makes them an official part of the UN. It talks about NGOs in there. And inside the UN, they call them civil society. In other words, in the UN's way of looking at the world, these private organizations are our spokesmen there. They're our representatives in there. I don't know if you paid your dues to the Sierra Club lately.
I didn't vote for them. I must have missed that meeting.
You missed that part, yeah. They are actually, they've been talking for years about reorganizing the UN and doing away with the Security Council, which is the only place that in the past we've been able to block some really crazy things, especially during the Cold War, because we had, you know, an absolute veto. And they want to do away with that and create a new division which has these NGOs there as they're deciding things. That would be another house of the UN. And
Get this straight. Our Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, says we, the American people, are guaranteed a republican, which they mean representative form of government, basically by officials that we elect. And now we have this new group that is coming in and telling us, you have to listen to us?
Well, that's what they'd like to do. I mean, let's be very clear. The United Nations is a club. It has no more authority than that over any of us unless we give it to them. And that's what our government has done over the last several decades, is give the United Nations that kind of clout. What do we care what they think? What do we care what they say? However, what they've been doing is they're moving towards this, creating this thing for these civil societies, private groups. They've also moved to create their own judicial end of things. We now have the criminal court, and they have moved to create some kind of a tax ability. We have UN taxes that are on air flight tickets and several other things like that, and they want very much to create their own army. Those are the three things you need to form a government: a judicial system, a tax collection system, and an army to enforce it all, and that's what they're moving towards. But they were set up as a club. Members could join it or not join it. And now they're very much moving towards global governance.
Well, I remember that last week our DOJ, our Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, went to the United Nations and made an offer, which was the newly formed federal police forces. And that one knocked me over when I read that one. And then I realized that over the past 6 years, 7 years, what has been happening is that the police have been marginalized. Of course, they don't know what they're doing, and they can't control the streets, and they can't control the rioting, and they can't control the guns, and they are racist, homophobe, whatevers. So therefore, the federal government had to come in and monitor and manage the police. So Loretta took these 12 cities and created an initiative called the Strong Cities Initiative, and then offered them to work in partnership with the United Nations police in order to enforce Agenda 2030.
Yeah, they are coming at us from every direction. Anything you can imagine, they are moving into to push this agenda, and people just become overwhelmed with it, and they just don't know what to do. I mean, you can't even describe it. It is so huge. They are, but their definition in 1992, a comprehensive blueprint for changing human society. And they used, the second E is ecological integrity or the environment. That's the excuse for all of it. We're going to do it to protect the environment. You know, if the Soviet Union tried to get us all to accept communism as the great thing that it is, that they said, and we rejected that. And in fact, we found the world found that, you know, the United States, the West, was all aimed at the communists, and we were at a stalemate. When they dumped the Soviet Union, and you watch when the Soviet Union fell, most of its leaders, including Mikhail Gorbachev, went into the environmental movement. And all the exact same things that they promoted through the Soviet Union are being promoted now through the environmental movement, and consequently through the United Nations, or vice versa. And it's all the same. These NGO groups and everything, that's what they're doing. And we rejected it as communism, but as environmental protection. That, you know, I've had these guys say to me, well, you can have all the rights you think you have, but what good do they do you if you don't have a planet to stand on? We've got to protect the planet. And Americans started accepting that in a panic. And as I say, they threw our liberties on the bonfire like a good old-fashioned book burning. And that's where we are today, all with the excuse of the environment. Global warming, this, you know, a lot of people ask, you know, a very logical question here about why, when scientists have proven over and over and over again that global warming is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on humankind, why do they continue to push that, even though it comes right out in front of them? The reason is that if they dump global warming, they lose their edge to scare us to death to accept all these things done in its name. And that's how they're doing it.
Well, I also believe when I started teaching, when I started investigating, I brought in my teaching background, and that was when I realized there was really a silent but fourth E called education. Because the only way you could get people to believe this is to give it to them in a phony curricula by changing information and changing data, changing our history so that their outcome-based education, which is what they call it, they now know and have the plan up front in front of them. So this is what they're working off of. After about 40 years of doing this, we now have a citizenry that I don't even think they know what science is. It's mind-blowing when you talk to some of the new graduates or even some of the older graduates who have absolutely no understanding of science other than the oceans are going to rise and we're all going to drown.
Yeah. Well, when you eliminate academics, when you eliminate knowledge, then you can throw anything you want into that open hole that's now created. And that's what they're doing. You've got children who have absolutely no idea of the history of the United States, the philosophy, the economics of the United States, why we are where we are and how we got here. They have absolutely no idea about that. They don't even know to ask the question. I mean, they're a blank slate. And if they had had some kind of learning on that, some of the stuff that's presented to them, they'd say, wait a minute, what about this? What about that? And instead, they're a blank slate, so they don't even know to ask the question. And one of the tenets, some of the groups pushing these programs actually advocate that the reason that we have wars, the reason that we have strife in the world, the reason we have poverty is because there's too much knowledge, and we need to get rid of that so that people don't feel the threat from that knowledge. They actually advocate that.
That one blows my mind, I have to tell you.
Look up the Eden Foundation. The Eden Foundation. It's an NGO.
Can you spell
out
that
of the
for everyone, please? E-A-T-O-N. Oh, Eden.
Yeah. Eden.
Okay.
Eden Foundation. I unfortunately had a series of email conversations with the head of the Eden Foundation several years ago because he didn't like my position on global warming. He had messed up one of my Sunday afternoons, and I, like an idiot, I responded to him. And when I began to look into what he promoted, this was one of the things they promoted, that there is too much knowledge in the world, and that we need to get rid of that. And you know, this is part of the curriculum. If you look at total sustainable development, trying to understand this and how massive it is, you have to understand that sustainable development requires a complete transformation of American society, and that includes our judicial system, our economic system, our ability to make individual choices, and you know, for your career, for your family size, for your location, your home, anything like that. Al Gore called this a wrenching transformation of society. It's what we had to go through to cure us of the ills of the 20th century industrial revolution. You know, that revolution that gave us indoor plumbing and indoor lighting and indoor right. heat, and you know, made our lives more comfortable and live longer. The horrors of that. And if you look at what they're doing, all the things that they're banning, making it impossible. You couldn't go out and start a new business today, probably. You know, it's very difficult to do. Trying to rise yourself up, trying to have a better life, and all that. Everything's banned everywhere you turn. We are getting, and people keep talking about America's becoming a third world country. Third world country is one step out of the caves, and I've proposed for years that the environmental movement really intends to put us back in the caves, but we won't be allowed to have a neighborhood campfire in the caves, because that wouldn't be good for the environment. But everything else we can have, the bugs, the cold air, the, you know, the hard surface, but that would be sustainable. When you listen to what they say, this is what they advocate, all with a straight face, basically.
Well, I think it was in February, the Vice President of the United Nations Climate Council, Cristina Figueres, even at a meeting in Brussels, told everyone, as she was standing there, that in order for this to succeed, they have to destroy 100-plus years of economic development in order to transform everyone so that we could save the planet, so that, in essence, the purpose of the environmental movement is to destroy Western culture because it is unsustainable.
Yeah, the attack on free enterprise is number one, and that's what has to go, no matter what.
You wrote many, many articles on that. They do that under their theory of wealth redistribution. So perhaps you can explain that to our listeners.
Yeah. Well, this is the third E, and that's the social justice or the social equity part of Agenda 21. And I've said many, many times, if you do not understand the social justice plank of Agenda 21, you do not understand Agenda 21. And that is nothing but redistribution of wealth. And you know, they always talk about it in such wonderful words, like it's an opportunity for all people to benefit equally from the resources afforded by society and the environment, redistribution of wealth. The private property they consider to be a social injustice, and this is an amazing reason that they consider this. Social injustice to own private property, because some people can build wealth from private property and others can't, so that's not fair. Where is it written in this country that no matter where you are in a social standing, that you can't begin to invest what money you have and begin to build property? Private property ownership is the reason the United States became the wealthiest nation on earth almost overnight. It's the reason we were the freest nation. It's the reason we had the highest standard of living. Private property ownership is literally the only way that the poor can get themselves out of poverty and build their own wealth. Every single program coming out of the United Nations is based on redistribution of wealth, take from these guys to give to these guys. It's a Band-Aid for today to get them through this day. Tomorrow they need some more, tomorrow they need some more, tomorrow they need some more. And eventually, the people they're taking it from suddenly find they need some to get through. So now they get on this, what I call lifelong breadlines. The UN and these programs offer absolutely no hope to get off the lifelong breadlines. They just keep you alive to be a social resource until they're done with you. And there's no way to build wealth out of that. And so what we end up with is more poor. And so, you know, their programs are designed, in fact, at the 2012 Rio Plus 20 Summit, which was 20 years of celebration of Agenda 21, they advocated from the podium zero economic growth. Zero economic growth. That is sustainable.
Why we have an economic plan in America that creates zero economic growth? Could that
Barack Obama's
really
a master
from?
With it. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And Tom, the first goal says to end poverty in all its forms everywhere. That's so wonderful. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I love that one. I love that one.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing. What they did at the UN last week, they do this every so many years. They did it in 2012. They did it in 2000, and they've done it a few other times too, but those are the three main ones that stand out. In 2000, they had the Millennium Summit. And at the Millennium Summit, all the world leaders came together, and they put eight goals together, the Millennium Project. And number one was, we're going to eliminate poverty in all of its forms. And, you know, here this is UN progress. They gave it a 15-year plan. By the year 2015, we're going to eliminate poverty. By the year 2015, we're going to fully implement sustainable development. On and on and on, these eight goals. 2015 comes along, and what do we have? More poor. All of their goals.
Oh my goodness. What a surprise.
Yeah, all their goals were an absolute failure. So what do they do for progress in the UN? They take the eight goals, and they transform the exact same goals into 17 goals, which means they just went into more detail. And what did they do? They gave it another 15-year plan. So now, you know, by 2030, we're going to implement all these totally failed plans using exactly the same failed process. This is UN progress.
I would like everybody to think right now, the United States pays about 25% of the budget of the UN. Think about that. Since the UN has been in inception since 1947, how many trillions of dollars do you think that America has given the United Nations when I would say just about every year they came out with the same goal, to end world poverty everywhere? Do you think with several trillion dollars we should have ended world poverty?
All we have to do is give all these people $1 million and say, go have at it. We'd have money left over.
I know. This would have been the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah. It's not, you know, what they say, rocket science. It's pretty easy. I'll tell you an interesting story on this. In 2006, I was invited to debate the issue of the United Nations before the Cambridge Union at Cambridge University in England. And the Cambridge Union is a 200-year-old debating society. Winston Churchill debated there. Ronald Reagan was there, others. And one of the people that I was debating on this was a gentleman who was the head of the UN's Millennium Project. And he and I were sitting next to each other. We had a formal dinner before the debate. And we were sitting next to each other, and I'd ignored him through most of it. But it just, you know, about time I was finished eating, I turned to him, and I said, you realize you don't have a prayer, don't you? And he looks at me and he says, about what? And I said, about ending poverty by using redistribution of wealth by the year 2015. He said, yeah, I know. Well, it gets better,
in
actually.
In that part,
because,
they're honest.
This actually, he was a very nice man. I will say that. That's why I don't mention his name, because I don't want to deride him. Because I started talking to him about private property ownership and as a means to build wealth. This is before the debate. And he looked at me and he said, Hernando de Soto, And that's who I was quoting. Hernando de Soto is an economist from Peru who wrote a book called The Mysteries of Capital, Why It Works in the West and Nowhere Else. And his point was that private property ownership was very difficult to achieve in most nations of the world, and where it was able to be achieved, prosperity grew. And he told me in that conversation that in his town in India, where he was from, they had begun to register private property ownership, to show ownership so people could use it for equity. They could prove it was theirs. And he said the economy had begun to grow. At that moment, I had to, he said, Hernando de Soto, he says, I have friends who are looking upon this favorably. At that moment, they called us to go and debate. So we go into the debate, we had a debate, and then as soon as it was over, I made a beeline across the room to him, and I said, sir, you and I started the conversation, and I want to finish it. And 2 weeks later or so, I found myself in his office at the UN. And that's when he told me about what they were doing in his village to create, and the economy was rising. It's right there in their own four walls, and they're too stupid to see it.
Well, I also want everybody to understand that when we say private property, that does not just mean land. That means your person. They want to control your person. They want to control how you think and what you think. They want to, and then private property filters over into your business, into your family. Whatever is yours will no longer be yours. So whether it's a business, whether it's land, whether it's your thoughts and your person, this will eliminate all of that. Now, why do you think they're doing that?
Power.
That's it.
It's absolute That's power it. Over everything we think, do, and say.
Yep. They want to control everything, which is why we, if you listen to some of the economists, they talk about the outcome-based economy, which is why we have zero growth. Because when you strive for nothing, you get nothing. You can't strive for nothing and wind up with something. It doesn't work that way.
Yep. Outcome-based means predetermined. That's
right.
What outcome-based education is about. That's the predetermined outcomes of it. And they say outcome-based economy, they know where they want it to go. And there are some incredible quotes from some people who are putting this stuff together. One of them you probably have heard of is a gentleman named Paul Ehrlich, who is the person who started back in the 70s advocating that we were going to have a huge overpopulation of the world, and we had to cut down the population. He said, he's now a professor at Stanford University, and he said, quote, a massive campaign must be launched to de-develop the United States. He went on to say, de-development means bringing our economic system into line with the realities of ecology and the world resource situation, the whole idea that we are, we have limited resources, and so we've got to bring it in with that. Well, then another guy, Michael Oppenheimer, who is from the Environmental Defense Fund, said, he made it a little clearer. He said, the only hope for the world is to make sure there is not another United States. We can't let other countries have the same number of cars, the amount of industrialization we have in the U.S. We have to stop these third world countries right where they are. Can it be any clearer what their plan is?
No. And you have to listen to Obama. What did he say when he went to South Africa? If you all think you're going to have air conditioning, think again. That's what this is, folks. So the idea that we are doing this to save the planet is meaningless, because that's not the purpose. You always have to look beyond what they're saying. Go listen to who is talking, and then go look up and see what that person has said in the past. You will be shocked.
Yeah.
You
will be absolutely shocked. And just on that very line, let me just offer this, because they say it's all to protect the environment. I use a line when I speak. I say very cynically, if you want to save a forest, send an environmentalist back to his high-rise in New York. The most unenvironmental people I've ever seen in my life, the most unknowledgeable people I've ever seen, are environmentalists. They're out there telling us all, they use all these big words about protecting the environment. Most of the programs that they put in place to protect the environment actually destroy it. And prime example are the forests. We have seen now, over year after year after year, forest fires that will not stop. They burn hotter than ever in history. They burn farther and wider than ever in our history. The reason is that sustainable forestry practices demands that they not remove any dead trees or brush from the floor of the forest. And what this does, first of all, is it brings in termites, other bugs, other diseases that make the healthy trees sick. They fall, and so you end up with 10 feet or more of kindling on the floor of the forest. And, you know, that's why they burn so hot. You measure how many trees are burned, how many animals are destroyed, how the environment is destroyed by this happening. So how is it protect? I know of timber people. There was a particular town out in the west, out in Oregon, that was being, the town was dying because they had cut out the timber industry, saying it wasn't healthy for the forest. And they were, the town lived on a mill, basically, on a timber mill. And there was a big storm. And the storm came in and knocked down all these trees. And they went to the Forest Service. They said, please, let us have those trees. We can keep the mill going for 6 months with those trees. No, it has to stay there. That's natural. Yep. And so this is the kind of insanity that we're getting from so-called environmentalists. They know nothing about protecting the environment.
No, and what they have designed for where they expect us to live is also horrifying, because one of the things that I did when I went to one of these meetings, after they finished telling us how we should be living in these wonderful apartments above our workplaces, which was exactly where I came from in Brooklyn, New York, and exactly why I moved out to the country, because I didn't want to live on top of where I worked. And I wanted to see green. I asked the gentleman that was doing this event, and I said, and where do you live, sir? After he finished telling us that we should really not be looking at such big houses and people want to downsize, and here I am shaking my head saying, no, I don't want to downsize. I want to upsize. I want space. I want to be able to, you know, walk in my house and have everything in its place instead of it being jumbled all together. I want space. So when he finished, I asked him where he lived, and he said, well, I live in the country. I said, oh, in a 1,200 square foot house? And he said, no, my house is 4,000 square feet. So you have to ask these people that are giving us these plans and programs to describe how they live and see what they're doing, you will be shocked. Tom, we're going to, I don't want to leave everybody with just the downside. I want people to be able to do something to fight this. And I know that you have been working on this so hard for a long time. Can you share what people can do? Because when you get the information, and if you don't have a conversation followed up by action, then it's like not having any information.
Yeah. It's funny because when we first started working on this, we, you know, everything we put out was listen to me. And I started getting notes from people, and they started to say, okay, we get it. What do we do about it? And I kind of jokingly said, gee, I don't know. I never got that far before. You know, so, and we began to work on that, and you know, first of all, if you go to my website at AmericanPolicy.org, we've created several items there that people can use. One of the most effective things we have is a little booklet that we put out. It's called Agenda 21, Special Report Agenda 21, and How to Stop It. And I travel the country using some of these ideas in it, and. You know, just so people understand, the about 2011 is when this kind of we began to kind of turn the tide a little bit on this stuff. The ICLEI, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, was one of the signers of Agenda 21, and one of the people who helped create it. And they made it their mission to go out to every community in the world to bring this sustainable development policy there. And what they got communities to pay them dues, and for those dues, then ICLEI would bring in software programs and training manuals and everything they needed to pretty much indoctrinate your employees down at City Hall so that they would only think in terms of sustainable development policies. And they would, this is where the quotas for how much energy use, water use, and all those kind of things would come from. And they had about 650 American cities that were members of ICLEI, were paying dues. In 2011, Commissioner Richard Rothschild in Carroll County, Maryland, he wasn't a county commissioner at the time. He ran a slate of people running for county commission, and they all won. And they ran on the issue of sustainable development. And the first thing they did, they became the first county in the country to end their membership in ICLEI. And since that day, we have had more than 150 cities leave ICLEI. I don't even know what the total is now. I see new ones every day. They stopped paying their dues to them. What I do know is that the head of ICLEI USA told an associate of mine that they're terrified of us because they can't get any new communities to join them because we've made them political poison. So that's a victory that we've scored.
That is a big victory. A huge victory.
This is one of the reasons they're pushing so hard in the way they are to get this done, to overwhelm us. But let me just tell you, there are three ways that they're coming at us, and this is how we need to fight them. Trying to get this into a soundbite, this is as close as I can get to it because it's so overwhelming. But the three ways basically they're coming at us is they are moving to take our private property, to abolish private property rights wherever possible. The government takes control of that property, and it decides what happens with it. The second way is the creation of non-elected regional councils, regional governments. You see these things being put together where you've got 7 and 8 counties all working together. These are non-elected. That takes the government farther away from the people, and we don't have as much say. They will tell you that, yeah, there are elected officials on that board. Yeah, they are, but they weren't elected to that. They were elected to be their city councils. They were elected to be county commissions and other things, and they hide behind that they don't have to answer to the people, and they do these things. And they are using these councils to apply for federal grants and to regulate certain things, and that's the third way. The federal grants are what fund the whole thing. That's the lifeblood of it. So those are the three... Pardon me, the three things they're coming at us with. These federal grants come with very strict rules, strings attached. If you take the grant for the community, you've got to put these programs in place. So we are trying to help people fight back in that way. What we've had happen in the past, especially in several states, legislatures are trying to pass anti-Agenda 21, pro-property rights legislation. We did get one passed in Alabama, and the governor signed it. We've had Tennessee, we've had other states where they've attempted to do it, maybe got it through one house, but didn't get it all the way through. Well, you learn as you go along. You don't know what's right, what's wrong, you know, how to fight back most effectively. We're learning that it doesn't work to try to put these one-size-fits-all bills together. A couple reasons for that. One is they don't define their terms. So they say, we're going to ban Agenda 21. Well, the other side never uses Agenda 21. So they'll say, oh, this isn't that. This is all local. And right. The other thing is they say they're going to try to protect private property rights, but they don't define what they mean by private property. And we've come up with a definition I'll give you here. But so that doesn't work. The other thing that happens when you put a one-size-fits-all bill together is that the other side focuses on that bill, and they crush it overnight. They put everything they've got into it. We're learning that the best way to go about it is to not a one-size-fits-all bill, but a legislative agenda, 1,000 bee stings coming at them from various directions. And my real model for this is a legislator in the state of Washington. His name is Matt Shea, state representative there. He put together a freedom coalition in the legislature. And they have managed, a year ago in the legislature, they put together 64 bills, all aimed at reducing the size, the power, the reach, the cost of government. They got hearings on 40-some of those bills. They got like 14 of them passed. This year, they did it again. This is progress step by step. And what happens then, you got 1,000 bee stings coming at them. The other side is now divided. Which one do they go after first? And you're going to get some of them through. And so this has kind of become our model on how to fight back.
What a wonderful thing. But folks, you can do that in your local community. It is so important now that you learn this information and run for office. The people that are your county commissioners and your school board members, they're regular folks just like you. They don't know any more than you know. I always told everybody, if you want to be an expert, carry an attaché case and get away from your house, and then people will think you're an expert. That's the way it works.
Yep.
So study a particular program. One of them, believe me, there are so many programs in Agenda 21 to make you hate them that you can certainly find one that is your passion that you hate. And then find out what's going on in your county and go to those meetings. And whenever possible, get on the zoning and planning boards, because that seems to be where they collect. And all of the regional councils go to the planning and zoning meetings, because, as Tom just said, their hot button is to rezone, and it's to rezone out of those horrible, atrocious single-family homes that mine might be bigger than yours, so it's not fair, so you can't have it, and we all have to wind up living in little cubicles. So it's so important. Our country was built on the fact that Americans must get involved in politics. That's why they always told us, especially in school, don't mix politics and religion. Don't talk about it. Those are the two drivers of America. Those are the things we should be talking about the most. So we've got to get on our school boards. We've got to get on our county commissioner boards. Or if not, go to the meetings. Make a friend of a county commissioner. Get online and go to Tom's website and pull down the information that's there. You can go to our website, agenda21today.com. We made brochures. There are videos. There's all kinds of information. Pick one, love it, and get involved. But that's the most important thing, Tom. Are you seeing more and more people getting involved?
I am, and this is the exciting thing to me. I was just in Michigan a few weeks back, and I can't tell you how many people were telling me they had run for city council, they had run for county commissioner, they got on planning boards, and they're making a difference inside there. The last thing the other side wants to see is our people sitting there on one of those boards questioning and seeing all the inside stuff, because what they say to each other in the back rooms is startling and very, very telling. And when our people start getting back there, now we've got it. And so this is vitally important that people do this. And as you say, go to the meetings. One of the things that we've created, and it's a very general thing, but it's kind of a tool. If you go to my website at AmericanPolicy.org, you can get it right off the front page. It's a resolution to protect citizens' property rights. Again, when, you know, property rights is the main attack. This is so huge, trying to wrap your head around it and figure out what can I do first. You got to focus on something. Every one of these programs, they cannot implement sustainable development without damaging private property rights. So focus on that. The rest of it will follow. The resolution to protect citizens' property rights says three things. One, if they're going to do something that's going to affect your property, they'll bring you into the conversation. Two, if they go ahead with what they're planning to do and it's going to cost you value on your property, they're going to pay you for it. And three, they can't go willy-nilly walking around your property to make these decisions without your permission. That's what it says. That's how radical it gets. You take this in there, you get your 3 minutes in front of the city council or the county commission that they give you, and you just go up and you say, ladies, gentlemen, as you're bringing these plans and these planners into our community, I've just got one question for you. What guarantees do I have you'll protect my property rights? And I guarantee you they'll say, oh, of course I will. Oh, hey, I am a property owner too. You just smile and say, I'm really happy to hear you say that. But ladies, gentlemen, I'd like to have it in writing, please, and you present this. I don't have time to go into exactly how this is all to be used. That's just a primer to it. But as I said, we have that booklet on there, Agenda 21 and How to Stop It, goes into detail what to do from that point.
Take a look, folks, at your vision plans. Every county now has one, and usually they're extended out for a ridiculous amount of time. I mean, nobody knows what is going to happen tomorrow. So how can you have a plan in your little community or in your city that says vision for 2050 or 2060? That's insane. That can't work. But the first thing that you should look at is exactly what Tom said. Go look in your vision plan and find the section that addresses private property. That's where you will find the information or the lack of information. And once you start reading your plan, what I found in my plan in my little community was the original plan had this whole section that was agricultural land. And then in the 2030 plan, all of a sudden that green was still there, but instead of it saying agricultural land, it said conservation. Look for that, because that means no private property.
Yeah. And the other thing, the greatest lie that you have got to absolutely ignore when they tell you this, that all their plans are just local. As you just said, most of these plans end with like 2030 or 2050 or something. Visioning, all those words are used. You can Google and you can find Jamaica 2030. You can find Dubai 2030. And you will find they're all exactly the same plan. There's absolutely nothing local about this whatsoever. It's almost verbatim in these plans. Sometimes they'll throw something extra in there, but it's all the same plan.
Well, Tom, I can't thank you enough for sharing this information with us, folks. It is so important. It is more important now today that we get involved and do it right, because we are at a point right now where I believe our country has a fork. We're at the fork in the road, and we have to make a right turn or a left turn. And as somebody said, either we're going to wind up voting for a socialist or a conservative, and that election should be very interesting. But that election doesn't matter if we can't control our local communities. So, Tom, if you would tell everyone where to find you and how they can get a hold of you, and if you want to get in touch with Tom, please feel free to do so. He is a wealth of information, and it's information that you have to know and you have to share. And don't be afraid of saying, I don't know. That's okay, because that's why we do shows like this. We're here to help.
Sure.
Tom,
yeah.
Tell everyone where they can find you.
Well, we're the American Policy Center, and our website is AmericanPolicy.org. And on that site, you'll find an archive of articles we've written on all these issues. You'll find all these tools that we have on there we've created to fight back. You can sign up we put out a newswire every couple weeks with new information coming out. You can sign up for that or get our action alerts and so forth. I also have my newsletter, the Deweese Report, which is you can sign up for that at deweesereport.com. It's DEWEESE, deweesereport.com. And we just made a big change in that. We're not going to publish it anymore, printing it, where it's all online, which means I can get the subscriptions out for just $10 for a year. So
wonderful. Tom, thank you so much for joining us, folks. Go to agenda21today.com. You can go to americaismyname.org. You can go to karenshone.com, and that's where you'll find all of my articles. Sign up for that newsletter. But it's most important that we stay in touch and work with people in our communities that are like-minded people. And we can get on top of this. It took them a long time to do it, but we're smarter than they are. So thank you all for joining me this evening. This is your host, Karen Schoen, with American Freedom Watch Radio. May God bless you, and may God bless America. Thank you all for listening.